You solemnly swear the evidence you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Welcome to Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I.
Come on, Johnny, you might as well talk. Who robbed that payroll truck?
I've read the case files, have you?
This sure gives an airtight alibi.
Crime Time is heard exclusively on Biz Talk Radio. Check out podcasts of our shows or listen live at biztalkradio.com. And now, your host of Crime Time, Vito Colucci, P.I.
Well, good evening, everybody. Another Sunday night, another Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, this show is a no-politics zone. So if you're looking for a lot of yelling and screaming between the parties or running for whatever they're running for, you won't find it here. So I'll give you 2 seconds to change, hang up with me, and go put on any channel you want for the politics. Go ahead, I'm waiting. Okay, we're back. Okay, I want to thank everybody for the good kudos they've been sending me for our last couple of shows. And what we're going to do tonight, too, before we get into the heart of the show, we're going to go back to had requests for our stupid criminals. So I pulled up a good one for you here, folks. Let me tell you about this one. A pair of would-be Chicago restaurant robbers have proved not every crime has a mastermind behind it. In other words, that means you won't see any of these two subjects on Jeopardy coming up in the next couple weeks, saying, I'll take world geography for 1,000, Alex. All right, Chicago police and prosecutors say two guys, Mario and Domingo, went to the Clifton Grill in West Rogers Park late Sunday, demanding food and telling the owner, I will kill you. I have a gun with me, the Tribune reports. Concerned for his customer's safety, police say the owner told the men, hey, look, I'm too busy right now. Can't you see that? Come back in an hour and I'll take care of you. All right? So according to CBS Chicago, when the men showed up a second time just after midnight, they demanded not only the food, but they demanded $100 also. The owner told the guy, all right, well, since you need $100, I got to go find my wife in one of the other rooms, and she's got to give me a checkbook so I can write you guys the check for that. So they sat down again, and this gave the owner of the restaurant enough time to call the police. And the police, the men were charged with one count of attempted aggravated robbery each. And not only that, one fella was charged with the possession of a firearm. In the United Press International reports, according to the police, the replica used was a squirt gun. You can't make this up, folks. These guys are the stupid criminals of the week.
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
All right, we are back. We are back. Tonight we're going to be talking about, like most of the country, unbelievable, about little Andrew, A.J. Friend, found murdered out in the Chicago area. We'll talk about that. My guest tonight is a chaplain out in that area where the boy was, and we'll talk about that, too. They lived in Crystal Lake, which is about 50 miles northwest of Chicago. So I want to put on Gary Cortez right now. He knows that area good. He's talked to some of the other people in that area about what went on. So Chaplain Gary Cortez, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Vito. It's good to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity to join you tonight.
Yeah, before we jump into this this horrible story here, how about those robbers, huh?
Squirt gun, huh?
Yeah, but not only that, he says, you know, give me, I want food. We want food. Give me food or we're going to kill you. You know, you guys got to come back. Look, you see, it's busy in here. Oh, okay, an hour? Yeah, an hour. Webb's back next time. We want $100 also, you know? And, okay, wait, right over there. Just sit down over there. That's a good one. I have to say
that's a good one.
All right. Well, unless you were in India or someplace over the last week, you know what happened on this case. 5-year-old boy killed in Illinois, was beaten, put in a cold shower. Just every day there's a little something new on this, Gary. It was terrible. He was killed, left in this other jurisdiction, not too far away. You're going to discuss that. And good work, kudos work to the police department, that's for sure. The Crystal Lake Police Department and, of course, the FBI and any other people that helped out in the case, okay? The chief, Crystal Lake Police Chief James Black, kudos to him. And to all of his people, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, it only took him an hour. So big deal. The police interviewed the mother and the father and they found out they were lying. And they grabbed them. No, this is good police work. Thousands and thousands of dollars were spent on this investigation. Just knowing that they possibly did it at the time, you have to build the case. And they kept, you know, going after the mother and father. They knew that they were the ones that killed them. And that takes a lot of good hard work. So they did a great job. So, Gary, what are you hearing out there about this case? What have you heard about it?
Well, you mentioned, you know, the amount of money. And my source in the area tells me that lots of money, lots of resources invested in searching for little AJ. And just incredible, the emotions and just how difficult this is for first responders who, many of whom have children the same age as this little boy. So as you can imagine, it is devastating on many levels, and the emotions are going to be all over the place for a very long time to come.
Yeah, you know chaplains right at that area. You're not far from that whole area there. You know, what have they been saying? See, in other words, a case like this, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of times the chaplains at a scene of a crime or something like that will talk to the mother or father of the victim. That's not happening in this case, of course, because the mother and father are arrested. They're the ones that did the crime. But still, watching the newscasts and everything, Gary, you see the neighbors that are overwhelmed by this, the women crying in the neighborhood, seeing the bed and the shovel come out of the mother and father's house there. And I think in a case like this, knowing that profession a little bit, the chaplain kind of waits. There may be aunts and uncles that are to AJ's aunts and uncles. We haven't heard too much about anything like that. But what would they try to do now? What would your friend be trying to do right now?
Well, just, you know, like any chaplain, any police and fire chaplain, you know, your first responsibility is to your department. In other words, you are there for the spiritual well-being and welfare of the police and fire, EMS. And so your main concern is to watch over them. And then, of course, as you mentioned, you don't have grieving, distraught parents. And so your mind cannot comprehend this, the parents have murdered their own child. But the whole community is going to be affected. And so the chaplain or chaplains, in this case, multiple chaplains will be deployed to help with grief, with emotions, conflicting emotions. I mean, you know, people are going to have all kinds of things going on right now. I mean, folks that were invested in this were praying for AJ's safe return. Now you're told he's not only deceased, but his parents were responsible. So it's an emotional disaster all over the place, to say the least.
Right, right. And also your sources tell you the police and a lot of people that were otherwise involved in this case, the good guys, so to speak, are pretty well messed up themselves right now from what they've seen and witnessed and everything of that nature, right?
Oh, absolutely. And
you minister to a lot of police officers and firemen throughout your whole entire area, not too far from where this happened. And you know, I know for a fact all the people that you still minister to now, whether they keep making phone calls to you or you see them, you pray with them, you just talk with them. And so these guys have to be prayed for, these police officers and everything else, knowing they go home to their kids maybe the same age or close to the age. So they need a lot of help.
Oh, absolutely, Vito. Recently, a crime scene investigator from the city of Chicago pulled me off to the side and had said to me, you know, everything that I have to see in my profession has got me conflicted. I'm having a crisis of faith.
Hold that thought, Gary. Hold that thought. We're going to be going to a commercial break. Stand by. Horrible murder. That song that you just heard in our opening here, going forward, Kyrie Eleison. It was a big rock and roll hit back in the 80s. Kyrie Eleison, for our people listening in, is Greek for Lord have mercy. And it's basically a prayer that you would see and hear in a lot of Roman Catholic and Greek Orthodox services. So check that out, Kyrie Eleison. Lord have mercy. And that's what we say on this case now too. So Gary, what do you think? Now you're just about telling us before we had to go to a break about whatever else things you heard.
Yeah, you know, I think Vito, the most important thing for people to remember is your police officers and firefighters are husbands, fathers, sons, they're human beings. And, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to separate, you know, what you're seeing and experiencing. I mean, this is a five-year-old child. And, you know, police officers from across the nation, I've talked to firefighters, police officers, people that are dealing with their own crisis of faith because of what they see in experience and the conflicting emotions. And, you know, every police officer and every firefighter needs to know that they probably will have a crisis of their own faith at some point throughout their career. And you need someone to help filter that for you. And that's what a chaplain can do, is to help them filter these emotions, help them find and keep a balance to their own faith. Because truthfully, there's going to be a lot of damage done. And some of these things, emotional things, may not surface in the first responders until months, perhaps even years down the road. So this whole community and communities that were involved in helping are just devastated. And I think we possibly are not even beginning to see the results yet of what I mean. But that's where chaplains have to be present and available, so that, you know, such as yourself, you can pick up the phone and say, hey, chaplain, I need to talk. You got a minute? In fact, just before visiting with you here, I received an urgent call from a first responder. Hey, chaplain, are you available? I need to talk to you. And that's what it's all about, being present and available.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And see, the public doesn't hear a lot about this. They're not talking on the TV right now about yet. Several of these detectives and everything are really out of work today. They just can't handle it. They need a couple of days off. Being an ex-police officer myself and seeing dead bodies and seeing situations with the parents, I know how that is. So they are not left untaken care of, so to speak. They need this. These are horrible scenes that they saw. And Gary, tell the folks about you see these things too. You had a case where you found right where you live. Why don't you explain what that case was about?
Yeah, I think that's very important. For people to understand. In the 20 years that I've been doing this as a police and fire chaplain, as you can imagine, I've seen everything conceivable and even inconceivable. One particular case several years ago, a young woman went missing. And so right away, as a spiritual leader in the community, people want, prayer vigils. They want to come together and they want to do something. We need to pray. We need to pray for her safe return. And so I was invested in it that way spiritually. And so as it turns out, I'm home one day and, across my fire pager, I hear that a body is found floating in the river right behind my house. Well, immediately, Vito, I had a very sick feeling in my stomach and I know, oh my goodness, this is probably the missing woman. And, what had happened is an off-duty firefighter here in our town, was fishing in the river and discovered this body. And sure enough, it was the woman. And as it turns out, she was beat to death by her husband, who is now in prison for the crime. But you're praying for her safe return. You're encouraging people. You want to keep people hopeful. And then right before my eyes, they're pulling her body out of the river. And certainly, without being graphic or going into any detail, that's not a pleasant sight to see. One of the officials that was standing on the riverbank with me actually commented and said to me, "I think I'm going to be sick." I thought, "Oh boy, this is terrible. Very, very, very sad. Very terrible." And it's just it's devastating on many levels for people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're letting the folks know what you see, what you witness, what you have to do. Okay, and just looking over some news, a little bit new on the case, as they're putting the timeline together. I'll read this to our folks here. 4 months before his parents allegedly beat him to death after forcing him to take a cold shower, AJ Friend told a doctor during an emergency room visit that, oh, maybe somebody hit me with a belt, according to a new timeline that was just released on Friday, detailing state child welfare investigations, interactions with the five-year-old boy. Maybe mommy didn't mean to hurt me, AJ told the doctor on December 18th, after the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services received a hotline report alleging environmental neglect of the boy and his younger brother, as well as cuts, welts, and bruises. And, the police were called to the home by the mother, Joanne Cunningham. They saw a very, very huge bruise on AJ's hip that he later told the officer that he suffered when his family dog pawed him. And, you could see how scared he had to do, being told by the father and the mother what he has to say to these people. And, it's amazing. I don't know. When we have these type of cases, both as a police officer, chaplain, or just, the agencies involved in this, you kind of wonder, okay, the dog did this. Okay, all right, everything else looks okay in the house. Let's go. And the public is always, crying out loud for, find out more. Why didn't they do more? Well, you could probably yell that. I'm sure I've yelled that many times myself, but, they could do so much when they don't have, you have to have the evidence before you grab the kid and the whole bit. The little kid, 5 years old, afraid of getting additional beatings, told them, no, the dog did this and, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm okay. And even though he says in that other line, I stated that, well, maybe mommy didn't mean to hurt me, he told the doctors after the Illinois Department of Children's received a hotline report. So it's a shame what, in a little short 5 years, what this kid had to go through. And we'll be back in a minute after our break. Stand by. Clapton, who lost his own child, as I'm thinking about that right now, and wrote this beautiful song many years ago. Gary, it's amazing. You know, I wasn't looking for sad songs today. I wanted to, you know, these songs to me is kind of showing more of heaven, where I feel in my mind, I know in my mind, that's where God has taken this little kid after what he went through. But, you know, so anyway, let's talk. Let's get back on the topic over here. Gary, this is a different case. You talked about the murder case you had there and everything else. Now, how does this differ from other adoptions or missing child cases, okay? This case don't have distraught or grieving parents, okay? So now what is that chaplain friend of yours doing there? We know there's distress on the street and everything. What's he doing?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing he's doing is staying present and available for his departments, you know, just being available. Also, people are looking for answers or for comfort, neighbors, community members. And, you know, you could go door to door, but I find that, you know, it's often difficult in today's society. You know, you have to be cautious and careful, but most likely there will be community prayer vigils or church services, and a chaplain could and would host something to allow people to come and to be comforted, to process what's happened. You know, you would invite the community, the neighborhood, the family members, you know, because you want to give people an opportunity to grieve and to move through the stages. And so the chaplain's work is going to have to do right now. This chaplain specifically will be doing lots of follow-up, lots of praying with people, lots of counseling, and basically a lot of support, just sometimes just listening, giving people a chance to talk, and you listen, which is more important than anything else, really, is to be present, available, and to listen.
And let me tell our audience, Gary, that when you or any other chaplain go to a scene, you are not there to promote your religion, okay? You are not promoting what you believe or somebody else promoting what they believe. You're going there for comfort. You're going there to ask them, do you want to talk to me about anything? Maybe not now is a good time. Here's my card. Here's my number. They don't want, at that time, many people don't want the religion. Let's call it religion at that point, okay? So a chaplain like yourself and like the person that's dealing with the town now, where all the police officers are, he's going. He's got a lot of work to do. Just with the police officers, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, he has that work that you'll never understand or see right now of what he has to deal with. I know, Gary, you've talked to people years later, still they call you on the phone from different parts of the country. Okay,
yes.
And I just wanted to let the people know you're not going to promote any religion as you kneel there, asking them what help you can give them. That's all you're trying to do is try to answer questions. Okay, can I meet with you 5-6 days from now when everything winds down, the funeral or whatever? If you need to call me, am I correct with that?
Absolutely. That's probably one of the more important things people need to understand is that a chaplain does not peddle religion or their brand of Christianity. And you basically are there to coordinate resources, whatever the people need, whatever the victims need, whatever the community needs, you are there to do as much or as little as is needed. But you're never there to peddle your religion and to promote your own beliefs. Now, in a time of tragedy, and anybody that's ever experienced a traumatic death or a tragedy, people understand how important it is to have a spiritual support there. There's just something about having a faith-based resource, a spiritual support, because people are broken and they're desperate and they're looking for hope. And you mentioned little AJ in heaven. You have to believe that. You have to get people looking now towards something bigger, because mental health is a big issue in our country and across the world. And there will be some mental health problems as a result of this. And we need to handle these things wisely. We need to keep people hopeful. We need to give them a chance to vent and to process and to mourn. And what they don't need is someone coming along peddling their religion. That is absolutely true. We don't do that. We coordinate resources and we serve as a spiritual support for people.
And ladies and gentlemen, I know Gary very, very well. I've known him for many, many years. And his style, his comforting voice that he has, people, I can't say flock to him. That'd be a bad word to say. But they like to listen to him. He's done other shows where people call him back and say, Pastor Gary, I want you back on my show again. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. Because they feel good after talking to somebody like him or his associates, okay, that are working very hard out in Chicago area right now, outside of Chicago. And so it's amazing of what people go through. I mean, I, as you know, Gary, many, many years ago, I had a shootout while I was on the police department. I felt fine right after it was over. I felt fine for a few years after it was over until the flashbacks came back. One man was killed and one was wounded in this, bad guys. And my wife set me up with a Christian psychologist. I had to go for a number of sessions, and that's many years ago. I was fine when I walked out his door, and I'm still fine now. So you have to go for these things, okay? I take it from somebody that from the police area that had to go for help. Sometimes it happens right away, and sometimes it takes time. So you know that, Gary. Have you seen that where people call you many months later instead of right away?
Oh, absolutely. And I love what you said. I mean, you know, right after the incident, your shootout, you were fine. Your training kicked in. You had an adrenaline surge. And you will always default to the level of your training. So, you know, highly trained police officer in a shootout. But then after the adrenaline and the chemicals, kind of stress chemicals leave your body and the reality of what happened, and then the human side of you starts kicking in. And this is very, very common, because we are human beings first. And once we get past the initial incident, it could take months before people start having noticeable problems, sleeping, diet, can't concentrate, irritable, angry. Sometimes people, and I've actually had police officers tell me they're very troubled with how they're feeling, which is nothing. They feel nothing. They feel no emotion. Months later, years of dealing with things. So that's a very common problem.
Right, right. Happens with RN nurses, too, I've heard a lot of times, too, from what they see. Because nurses and police officers see this stuff so often that you wind up in what I call talking. When you get off the job, you can say to somebody, well, you're still talking like a police officer, meaning that you're kind of just, okay, what's the problem here? What's going on? How is this? How is that? Because you've kind of lost a lot of the deep feelings. I mean, you go and you see somebody with suicide and somebody else is killed. It becomes, I can't say commonplace, it's never commonplace, but you start the what is it, the jargon, the way you speak, the way you talk, and you have that kind of thing. And that's when you start going through many, many bad stuff in your life.
Right. Yeah, it's mechanical or robotic. And
I like that. That's exactly what it is. That's right. That's exactly what it is. So, you know, this it's amazing. Okay. This is amazing. I know if anybody asks for your help, I know if you needed help, because, you know, you guys are, you know, let's say half hour, 45 minutes from where this actually happened. So you all have your own territory, but I'm sure you also go help people in need. If there's a big, big problem going on and it can't be handled by just one chaplain or one helper, and you're at the direction basically of the fire chief who's at the scene or captain, or the police chief or captain who's at the scene. They will direct you in what to do, where to stand, basically. Not that they're dictating everything, but, you know, where to go, who to help. They may point out some people to you. And I know we're going to a break right now, so Gary, stand by, and we'll be right back with Gary Cortez. Stand by. How far is heaven? Lord, can you tell me?
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see.
To the sounds of I Can Only Imagine by Mercy Me. Beautiful song. One of the best songs of the last decade.
I can only
imagine. It's just a beautiful title. I can only imagine what it'll be like when I walk by his side. And, you know, I was telling my wife this morning, I'm picturing little AJ in the arms of Jesus, like we see that picture many, many times, of Jesus holding a bunch of children on his lap as he sits. So that's that. Gary, I want you to give, let me give a little background. Gary, first of all, is also a pastor of a church in the, let's say, Rockford, outside of Rockford area. Gary, you want to give him a little information about the name of the church and where it's located? Email address, if anybody needs to give you a call, just to talk to you about the show or talk to you about themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our church here just outside of Rockford is Beacon Hill Church. We have a lovely, lovely little church building overlooking a golf course. I'll tell you, I mean, we have a heart for first responders here. You know, we have a retired fire chief in our congregation. We have an active fire captain from just outside of Chicago. We have an Army general. So we love our military. We love our first responders. And an email, the best email to reach me at is going to be chaplain@byronfire.com. And the word chaplain, chaplain, at Byron, Byron, fire.com. And that's the best way, the easiest thing to remember. And of course, I am available. And as you mentioned before the break, we do help one another. That's part of the fire service and the law enforcement community, is that we help one another. You call in support and help from other districts, other agencies. And that's a big part of what we do. You know, we take care of our communities, but we help take care of other communities as well.
Yeah, and you also have a police uniform, police chaplain uniform, and also have a fire department chaplain uniform, which is good because people can see that. Now, I forgot, what do you have, any patches on it that actually say chaplain? I forgot.
Yes. You have to be clearly marked that you're there representing the police department or the fire department. Now, if when it comes to the fire department, if there's a structure fire or a motor vehicle accident or some type of an operation like that, I have the full what's called the bunker gear or turnout gear with the coat, the pants, the boots, and the fire helmet. So easily identified, and it actually says fire chaplain right on the back. Police department, you've got the police patch. It says the police department, police chaplain. And so there's no mistaking that you belong there and who you're with. I think that's important to, you know, make sure everybody knows why you're there and what you're doing there.
Right, right. And your services are Sunday morning, right?
Yeah, we have a Sunday morning service at 10 a.m. We also have a Wednesday evening midweek service at 6:30. Now, of course, tonight, Sunday night, we do not have a Sunday night service. We do have other meetings and leadership and so forth, but primarily 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, that's our big event. That's what I call it. That's our main event.
And you're a throwback kind of guy because you wear a pager, a beeper.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, that the pager,
which is fine. I mean, I've been with you when your beeper has gone off and you had to leave to go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, nowadays, I mean, you know, things are more modern, and we do get notified over our cell phones as well because, you know, if you're out of range. But yeah, you know, that's a big part of it too, is to stay connected, to be informed, so you know ahead of time, because as soon as you know you're going to be going, you know, there's a lot to process in your own mind. You know, what possibly am I heading into? What steps, what course of action, you know, what will I be doing? And you had mentioned before the break about, you know, reporting to the chief or whoever is the incident commander, and getting instructions. And so that's a big part of what we do as well, sizing things up. And making some decisions accordingly. You know, who needs my services? What will I be doing? Clearly, when there's a deceased victim, then, you know, the deceased victim, I like to say it this way, I'll watch over the deceased victim as a liaison for the family who can't be there. And oftentimes I get called upon to do a funeral service for the victim who is deceased. And that's another way to continue ministering to the family. And really, that's what it's all about, is you minister to people, you serve them with compassion, and you're there to help them through the dark valley. And no one should be walking through these dark valleys alone. And that's what I'd like to think of my services as, is just helping people navigate through the darkness.
Right, right. Yeah, I've been with you. And, you know, I say beeper because I know you have that on you. But, of course, a lot of communication via your cell phone, of course, and the emails and all stuff of that nature, too. But, I like that you still have that pager where you can say, oh, this is from the fire department. Let me make a call here or whatever.
Yeah.
And like that. So, I was going to ask you one other thing here. Let me see if I remember before we run out of time. Oh, you also speak at many different places, right? You spoke at, I think, you in Rockford and different places.
Yeah, absolutely. And anybody that, you know, will call, and sometimes they're looking for someone to present on the ministry. Well, tell us what you do. Tell us what it's like to be a chaplain. Not only do I speak about, you know, the ministry of the chaplaincy, but also I do get called upon to provide some training as well and speak along those lines. So yeah, absolutely. I like to tell people, exploit me, use me, so I can, you know, so I can share my knowledge, my heart, and my passion. So, you know, before I get too old and I don't want to do this, I want people to exploit me.
That's it. Okay. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen. You got his email address. We're out of time. Thank you for a really great show tonight. I've learned a lot, and I think you've explained your business, so to speak, your job, what you do in these kind of emergencies all the time, and I respect that very much. So, ladies and gentlemen, until we talk to you again, we say goodnight, and we'll see you and hear you next Sunday night. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.